It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Balthaser.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 12 of The Scoop. I'm Dalton Balthaser, joined by my weekly Wednesday shoplifters. Matt Vender, Kyle Gauss, John DiCarlo.
Trump had to get involved. How's it going? For me to be here.
Perfect timing.
Facing 10 years in prison, but I'm back.
Yeah. I was listening to 975 on the way in, and Barkley was on. And Missinelli just couldn't wrap his mind around the fact that Lonzo Ball is not LaVar Ball. He kept saying, he's like, LaVar Ball's brother. I was like, no, this is true, Missinelli. You paid a lot of money. Maybe you should do better.
We have clean records. We're here.
Yeah. A little smudged.
What do you want to tell us?
No, I got nothing. Very clean life. Clean living.
Anyway.
But a very dirty attitude. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Shot across the bow.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, why don't
he's sitting a little closer to me at the scoop this week. So. Yeah. But anyway, we got a lot coming up in the show. We're going to recap Cincinnati, another victory for the Owls, back to back. We'll throw in some Vintel Bryant audio from practice this week. We'll talk UCF, some hoops, and get to the mailbag. We'll get right to it. The Temple Owls defeat the Cincinnati Bearcats 35-24 last Friday on the road. Another good win for the Owls, and it seemed like a month ago we weren't really sure if they'd have a chance at bowl eligibility, but now they do.
Yeah. That's true.
Great point, Kyle.
Frank Nuttall plays well again, bounces back from his only two interceptions as a starter. It wasn't the best ball that he threw to Adonis Jennings, but it was just kind of like one of those fluke plays that comes up and has a turnover. Bounces back from that to lead Temple to 35 points, which is a season high for them, which is ridiculous. The 35 points is their season high, but good for them. David Hood actually running the ball when Rockwell Armstead can't play in the second half. I think it was just an overall impressive win. Like, it's one of those games you look back and you go, oh, they only won by 11. It was further apart than that in the second half. They really took control in the second half, playing their best ball. Delvon Randall, probably, I thought it was an interception at the time, but apparently that got overturned. That would have been his fifth
season. Great play.
Yeah, it was a great play. He's really becoming, for lack of a non-cliche, a ball hawk. Seems to have a nose for the ball. And, yeah, I think if there's any good time to play a team like UCF coming up, like Matt talked about last week, this might be the best time. It's cold. They're playing their best ball of the year.
Could be rainy.
Yeah. I mean, I asked Jeff Collins about that a little bit Tuesday, and then he said, I said, is there any sort of, like, little, for lack of a better term, like, rivalry going on here? And he's like, nah, we just approach each game like it's the next. But I do think if Temple has, like, a little bit of a rivalry going on in this league, I mean, obviously we've talked about UConn before, but it's a little bit of recent history to this series, and I think it should be a fun game on Saturday. I think they have a chance to win. I mean, UCF is really, really impressive on both sides of the ball, but you saw a lot of I think what you needed to see last Friday against Cincinnati to think, okay, they're in decent shape heading into this game. I mean, Cincinnati is not what they used to be, but you still won on the road. Frank Nuttall wins on the road. You know, as Jeff Collins pointed out on Tuesday, runs a touchdown in, throws a touchdown, and catches a two-point conversion pass, and the juice is loose.
Did you see Maction last night? They used the Frank Nuttall play?
Yeah.
I retweeted. Yeah. They did the fake audible at the line, and then the little end around and throw to the quarterback.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if they were watching Temple
play
on Friday night.
Influences college football. Yeah. Everywhere, people are looking at
play calling influencer.
DVP out there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, against Cincinnati, the run game is one of the things that really stood out to me. I mean, they ran the ball as well as they had. I mean, I don't think they ran the ball that well going back to last season. Mm-hmm. That was probably, you know, when you'd have to look back and see the best running game they had goes back to last season. I mean, they ran for over 200. They ran for 205 yards on 43 carries. I mean, pretty much anybody they wanted to run the ball with was effective. They even got Frank Nuttall going on. Yeah. I mean, they did some interesting things with him in the run game, and he was able to get a couple first downs.
I liked his quote after the game. He's like, I'm not that athletic, but I'm an athlete, so I can do some things. I was like, yeah, that makes you probably really athletic.
Yeah. And I think it's partially just, I mean, Jeff Collins talked about this in his press conference on Tuesday, but it goes back to Frank being you know, kind of a film junkie. He's always at EO studying film, and he saw some things with the Cincy defense where there would be some openings for him to pull it and, you know, keep it and run it. On that one where he ran it for the touchdown, he really had the ball right in the right in Hood's chest, and he took it, pulled it, and ran it for the touchdown. So I think that goes back to Frank just studying the film and being, you know, a guy who spends a lot of time at EO.
Yeah, real quick on that play, if you actually rewatch it, he even kind of like pauses after he has Andy Hood's chest, he pulls it back, and he even pauses a bit. Then he allows kind of everyone to swarm in before he makes a decision. It seemed like he just had like a knack on that play. He knew how they'd react to that play.
Yeah, it looks very, very comfortable, and I think a lot of people have observed this now that the team just looks calm. I think we talked last week about the fact that there's like they've committed fewer penalties. I mean, you'd like to say part of it's coaching, part of it's just better discipline on the part of the players, but I think Frank's had a calming influence on them.
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't think this was a team that would have just overpowered anybody earlier in the season. I mean, you look at what Rich Rovato was able to do late in the game.
Gave him the ball one too many times.
Yeah, they gave him the ball one too many times, and he fumbled.
But he kept running.
Yeah, he kept running over people, and the offensive line was getting a good push. And that offensive line, I mean, they've gotten healthier over the past couple of weeks, but they're still banged up. Getting healthier, but still banged up. So, I mean, the way that the offensive line has gotten better has been huge. But I've just been, I mean, I think the way they were able to run the ball is really encouraging because, you know, against a team that averages about 47 points per game, you're going to need to hold the ball, you're going to need to be able to run it well, and you're going to need to probably be able to, you know, win the time of possession if you have any chance at beating UCF.
So, Matt, you had a chance to talk with Ventel Bryan at practice on Tuesday. What stood out from that conversation that you had with him?
So, I thought it was interesting. I mean, Ventel didn't really deny that he basically said, you know, look, I need to get better individually as a person. He didn't deny that there were some things that went just beyond his hamstring issue and being a little bit banged up. There was a reason beyond that why he missed the Notre Dame game, didn't travel with the team to South Bend, and then was held out against Navy a couple weeks ago. He acknowledged that there was something to it just beyond the fact that maybe he was a little bit banged up, which some, you know, were trying to lead us to believe. But so I think he was pretty honest and candid as he could be. I thought he came out and basically said he needs to get better, but he's in a good place right now. Obviously, he led the team in receiving against Cincinnati, and he looked pretty good. He looked like the guy that was going out and almost had 1,000 yards last year as a redshirt sophomore, and he missed 3 games last year for a shoulder injury. So, I mean, he was. Looking back at it last year, I said this in my story, which just went up on the site, but he was viewed as probably a guy that could potentially leave for the NFL early. He was viewed as he's the team's leading receiver from last year, and they do have a lot of really good receivers on this team, and they have some depth at the position, but he was expected to be that number one guy this year. Things haven't gone as planned, but I think he's in a good place right now. I think he's he's going to be able to give them something as in this final stretch. And, you know, I think he's in a good spot right now.
So here's that conversation with Matt and Ventel Bryant for your ears.
What's it like for you to be back out on the field Friday night against Cincinnati?
It felt great, you know, happy to be back out here with the guys, you know, to contribute as much as I can, you know. And that's basically it, yeah.
Just, what's the season been like for you, obviously? You know, you have a new coaching staff, new offensive scheme. Struggled a little bit after coming back against Notre Dame. Just what's this whole season been like for you?
Individually, you know, I had a lot of ups and downs, you know. A lot of growing I had to do, you know, with this new staff, gelling with this new staff, you know, not being, you know, confident in myself, you know, when I wasn't playing as well as I thought I was going to be, you know, and just the communication with the coaches and the players, you know, I felt like I was lacking a little bit there, and I just had to, you know, get back to the old me, and now I'm back here today.
How do you build on your performance Friday night?
Just keep going, you know, just working every day as hard as I can, you know. I know I can do it, you know, it's just confidence, a confidence thing, you know. So this is going to be a good test for us against UCF. They're a great team, and we expect a great game.
What do you know about UCF? What have you seen so far from them on film?
They're an athletic, fast, and physical team. You know, their cornerbacks play really well. You know, their front seven is pretty good also. They got some big guys in there. We just got to come out and just be physical and just dominate as much as we can. You know, I feel like this game is going to rely heavily on our wide receivers. If we can make plays down the field, it's going to open up a lot for our offense.
What do you think kind of opened up for you Friday night? What changed for you Friday?
Just getting out there, getting in the rhythm, you know. I had an easy pitch and catch with Frank in the first quarter, you know. Just getting out there, you know, having fun with those guys, you know, just feeding off those guys, you know. Kirkwood made an excellent double move for a touchdown. You know, Isaiah's been playing great all the season. So just feeding off those guys, you know, just being confident in myself, just, you know, I just felt like I played well.
After missing the Navy game, what'd you kind of learn from that?
I just learned, you know, that you can't take anything for granted, you know. I just have to continue to be a good teammate and a leader on this team. You know, I'm an older guy now, so things are going to be expected highly out of me, you know. And just getting back to the basics of what I've been doing since I got here, you know, when I was a single digit, you know, when I was a freshman, just hungry, dominant, ready to go. That's just what's going to help me.
Was it difficult for you to lose that single digit and now, you know, you're wearing 19? Was that difficult?
Not really, you know. Of course, I wanted it, you know. Things happen. But I feel like now it's just a new start for me, you know. Things haven't really been going my way individually. And I just felt like I need to do better individually as a person, you know, on and off the field. And I feel like right now I'm in a good place right now, and I'm happy to be back with the team.
This game against these guys last year was really the key to your season. So just have a lot of good memories of that. PJ leading one of the great 2-minute drives of all time, really.
Yeah, that was a great game. We played against UCF last year at their home. They're coming up here. You know, they have a great team. They're undefeated right now. Their defense is playing lights out. You know, they're fast, physical, you know, with a lot of energy, play with a lot of energy. But like I said, mentioned earlier, if our receivers come out ready to play and attack and do what we know we can do, then it will be a great game.
Is there any intimidation given that you guys really need to win one or even win out, you know, hit a bowl game, and you got a 14-20 team coming in? I mean, you know, is there pressure in that situation?
I definitely don't think it's pressure. We've been playing lights out these past few games, you know. You guys seen it. Frankie stepped in and did an excellent job, you know. Receivers are playing at a high level. Isaiah's playing at a high level. Kirkwood, all those guys, you know, and just bringing me back, you know. We feel like we have a shot, you know. They're undefeated. They're having a great season, but we have a mission to go to a bowl game, send those seniors off on the right foot, you know. So that's what we plan to do.
All right, so there's Matt talking with Ventel Bryan about how he's, you know, been dealing with some things he's been going through this season. And make sure you check out Matt's piece on the website as well. And as we transition here to UCF, the undefeated UCF Knights, 9-0, right? And they're undefeated in the conference. So I think they're 14th now in the nation.
Yes.
Correct. Yes. So the Owls turned their attention to them on Saturday in what could be a little wet, rainy game. I think they want like a half an inch of rain here in Philadelphia, so we'll see what happens.
Meteorologist. Dalton Hurricane Balthazar.
No. But anyway, what do you guys see in this matchup coming up against a UCF team that's been firing on all cylinders?
Prolific offense. I mean, they're one of, 11 teams in the nation that is in the top 30 both scoring offense and scoring defense. So, I mean, they've been pretty impressive in all their games. I mean, it would have been fun to see them play Georgia Tech. That was one of the games that got canceled earlier in the season. But I saw a little bit of them against UConn on Saturday. The game was a little close in the first half, and then they eventually just kind of rolled over and won that game 49-24. Mackenzie Milton's a dual threat guy, not a really big guy, but just looks like he has good command of that offense, has a really high completion percentage. He's, I think, third nationally in completion percentage, completing nearly 70% of his passes. I mean, they're tough, and Scott Frost has them playing really good football. I think Temple has a chance to stick around this game just because of how they're playing defensively. And I mean, I think this is there's something to be said for Temple kind of peaking at the right time. And this game, just as much as any bowl game they may play in, I mean, this is their most important game of the season. And this is a game where you'll look for them to be really aggressive, throw, you know, any talk of mayhem, blitzing from multiple directions. That's what they're going to have to do in this game to have a shot, because Jeff did mention that they've been hurt by mobile quarterbacks. They've been hurt by guys being able to get out of the pocket a little bit, seeing a lane, and you know, when something opens up there, and Milton can hurt you that way. But I think it's going to be a really, really entertaining game. And you know, they score points at such a furious clip. And I think I'll be interested to see if the game is a little bit of low scoring in the first half. I mean, how does UCF respond to that? Because they really haven't been faced with that type of scenario this year. I mean, just the
the scores, you know, 61-17 over FIU, you know, 51 points at Cincinnati, 63 at East Carolina. I mean, these aren't great teams, but, you know, 73 against Austin Peay. They were tested a little bit against SMU, but they've been pretty much doing whatever they've wanted to. But, I like Temple's chances in this game. I think this is going to be a really fun matchup to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I think it does kind of work out schedule-wise just because you have weather. And then UCF, obviously still 9-0, so you're really kind of looking for warts on otherwise beautiful situation. But, I mean, the last three conference games have only averaged 37 points a game.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's still a great number, and most teams would love to average 37 points a game, but their numbers are kind of inflated by early. How Temple had a tough schedule in the beginning and it got easier, theirs is the opposite. They started off ECU, Cincinnati. They beat up on a good Memphis team. They beat up on a mediocre Maryland team. But they start playing Navy and they only win by 10. They start playing SMU, they only win by 7. UConn hung around until the second half. A lot of people, when they see numbers like this, just assume that they go tempo. They don't go tempo that often. They go tempo after big plays, but overall they're a bottom third in the nation team when it comes to plays run the game. But when they do run plays, obviously they're really successful. They're number two in the nation at 7.8 yards per play.
Mm-hmm.
Milton looks like another recruiting miss from some of the evaluators out there. Didn't have many offers coming out of Hawaii. Decided to follow Scott Frost from Oregon to UCF. I kind of like Temple's chances in this too, to be honest. Statistically, it doesn't really scream to me like this is a major thing. I think Temple's offense is starting to click. I think if they can run the ball at all, like they did, if they can replicate what they did against Cincinnati, against UCF, I think they're really in it. I do think it's going to take some situations, like when ECU came couple years ago and they forced five fumbles.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to necessarily need to be that drastic, but I do think they're going to need to force turnovers, whether it's Delvon Randall coming down with one of those interceptions or what. But Milton hasn't turned the ball over yet. I just kind of get the feeling this is going to be a cold, relatively miserable, rainy day. We'll see how Milton, who's from the beautiful islands of Hawaii, will deal with it. Because, I mean, you're going from Hawaii to Orlando to... His away games this year, Maryland during September is by fine. Cincinnati during October might have been a little cold. At Navy might have been a little cold, but then you're at Dallas and everything else has been at home.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be curious to see how they deal with that actual weather.
Yeah, as Kyle and John like to say, I'm trending kind of positive here. I mean, I think timing can be everything sometimes. And, you know, the way Temple's playing right now, I think they're peaking. They're playing their best football of the season. So, with that and, you know, the half inch of rain or whatever kind of weather is that's coming, it's going to be a little bit chilly.
Very reliable.
The European model or the American forecast?
The American one
said. Well, if it was the European model, you'd be talking about the metric system, centimeters.
We'll see if meteorologists don't got that right. But, I mean, you have to like, all things considered, the way Temple's playing right now, the weather, it's going to be a little bit chilly. You know, Mackenzie Milton's from Hawaii, probably hasn't played in weather like this. So with all that, I mean, you have to like Temple's chances here. With that being said, I think one thing that concerns me is that linebacker spot right now, the Will linebacker mm-hmm. spot especially. You lost Chappelle Russell for the season with what's believed to be another torn ACL, and then Isaiah Graham Mobley is apparently in the concussion protocol, so your backup Will linebacker is also questionable at best this week. So if he's unable to go, you're looking at two walk-on linebackers as your replacement for him. And Jeff Collins was actually asked about Jared Folks and his status. Folks obviously was what kind of split the starting role at middle linebacker last year with Jared Alwan, and he's been kind of MIA this year. And Jeff didn't really seem to be too pleased with being asked about it and kind of just shook off the question and said he probably won't be ready to play. But that linebacker spot against this good of an offense, I mean, I like Temple's chances and I like the fact that, you know, the weather and all that, but that linebacker spot could get exposed against an offense like this.
Yeah, like you said, that's the one area, like I said before, where they've been hurt a little bit by some mobile quarterbacks. He said, we've defended the back end really well. We've gotten a lot of the pressure that we wanted to get. So, I mean, obviously, if they win this game, it's an impressive deal. It's their best win of the season. But if they win this game, it's also, I think, a huge step in the right direction for, you know, Jeff Collins and Tavor Johnson as a defense. Because I think, as we've been saying, if they win this game, I think you're going to look back and say it was because they got pressure on Mackenzie Milton. They threw something at him that he hadn't seen before. They rattled him. Yeah, I think like this is a game where you see what guys like Michael Dogby, Quincy Roche. Guys that can make plays off the edge, guys like somebody that that spies Mackenzie Milton, you know, a deal like that where they force a turnover, something that's momentum changing. Yeah, we've been talking about the weather as of now. I think it's supposed to be 54 degrees and raining, so not exactly like Lambeau Field type of weather or anything crazy, but...
Are you questioning my report?
No, it's just 54 degrees and rainy. So I didn't have it down to like the half inch, but I don't know. Yeah, they used to put Glenn Hurricane Schwartz up on the video board. What if it's Dalton
like an
this
old
week?
Like end of the Big East era jersey?
And Omar, yeah, it was an Omar McDonough Hales jersey, number 17.
You're not allowed to say that name to Temple fans anymore.
Because he's a Rutgers.
Our United 19 is all the tweets.
Omar served his time here. Anyway, I don't know. Should we get to predictions?
Yeah. Yeah, what do you guys think? We were all good last week. I think we all picked Temple last week, correct?
At one point before they had that last touchdown, Matt and I both predicted 18-point wins, and unfortunately it became an 11-point win.
Right.
Close but no cigar.
Yeah.
Oh, I've been wrong so much this season that what's the difference at this point?
Predictions, John.
I don't want to go first.
I'm not asking. We always go first. You can go first.
Who the hell do you think you are? I'm not asking. Did I stutter? I'm going to go 38-35 Temple on an Aaron Bumeri field goal with 3 seconds left.
Did you tweet like 6 days ago what is going on with Aaron Bumeri?
Yeah,
those kicks against Cincinnati were very ugly, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what's going on with that.
I don't know if I'm ready to call it out right yet. So the line's down to 13.5. I say Temple 31, UCF 38.
Who says scores backwards?
Well, we're a Temple-oriented podcast, so you lead with Temple and then you bring in the hammer.
That's how you do it.
It's a shame you don't advise a radio station.
Yeah, and I always tell them to say the final score.
Matt, what's your prediction?
I think Temple wins this one. I'll go Temple 31, UCF 28.
I think UCF somehow finds a way to win this game. I think their offense is just too prolific for the Owls, although the Owls have been playing some better defense. Give me UCF 27-21.
Ooh, low scoring affair for Dalton.
Yeah.
It's going to be rainy.
No, I just got a chuckle out of... the UCF game notes that we have here, it says a UCF win would, and there are 5 bullet points. The first one says, be better than a loss. And number 5, give Nitro bragging rights over Stella.
Nitro is one of the best mascots in the conference, but you keep Stella's name out your mouth. Yeah. As a ferocious mascot, she'll claw your eyes out, she'll get through that foam, get to whatever
sophomore
theater major is in Nitro's uniform, and she will get to it.
Temple has his own Nitro, too. Fullback.
Before he fumbled on Friday, I almost tweeted out Chestmont League standoff, and then he fumbled.
So now we're going to transition to the basketball squad, who opens up their season today, if you are listening to this when we release it on a Thursday, against Old Dominion at the Charleston Classic. They're going to be playing 4 games there this weekend. I guess, what are your expectations for this Owl team coming into the weekend in this, I guess, it's their first game of the season?
Well, I think we'll see right away how settled they are with Josh Brown back in the lineup, especially in the second half. We've talked about the new wing talent that they have coming in with J.P. Moorman, Dre Perry. You guys were at the exhibition. I was not. I don't know if I put too much stock into it. You know, immediately people were like, oh, my God, they only beat him by X number of points, blah, blah, blah.
Like 25.
Yeah, and they did not play the last 8 minutes back here.
I mean, this is not the easiest of games to open the season. Old Dominion plays defense. They're 2-0 already, so they've already played 2 games. This will be Temple's season opener. They're not they defend well. They've got some guard talent. 2 brothers on the team in BJ Stith and Brandon Stith. Well, Brandon Stith is 6'7", 240, blocked 41 shots last year, rebounds the ball well. They've got a guy in the middle in Trey Porter, 6'10", 230. Rebounds the ball well. So, I think it'll be an interesting matchup for them because this team does defend, they do rebound, they do block shots. So it'll be an early test to see how physical Temple is, how, really just how kind of determined they are with Josh Brown back in the lineup. It's always interesting to see in any season opener how quickly Fran Dunphy goes to the bench, how quickly he goes to any freshman, what he'll do with the lineup. So, not an easy game by any means, but an interesting matchup to start the season, I think.
Yeah, I think not to put too much credit into an exhibition game, but I think the exhibition game showed you some of the strengths and some of the warts. I think there are going to be times where Obi's going to need to do things out in the shoot. He showed some of that in the exhibition. He showed some of that before the exhibition when he was doing turnaround jumpers. I think that exhibition shows you how deep they can be. Mormon and Perry off the bench. I mean, Perry looks like a 33-year-old male when it comes to just, like, physique. Like, mm-hmm. Matt made the comment beforehand, like, I'd like to ask my dad, who doesn't pay attention to basketball that much, what class he thought Dre Perry was. Because usually you can tell by the strength and conditioning, like,
right.
Oh, that's a freshman, yeah, that's yeah. a sophomore. He's the most physically intimidating person I think they've brought in as a recruit in a while.
Mm-hmm.
I think that ability and that newfound depth allows somebody like a Nate Pierre-Louis to be aggressive on defense.
Yeah.
I think
you guys were really impressed with.
I was impressed with Nate Pierre-Louis. I think is their best on the bench off on the ball defender.
Right.
I think he's going to be that guy to come off the bench and be like, I need you to just lock this guy down for the next 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I think Old Dominion is going to be a relatively tough first game, just because, like you said, they've already played 2 games. Temple's going to have to be knocking off a little bit early season rust. Josh Brown looked like he didn't have any issues coming back from his Achilles. At one point, he fell down onto his knee and came up kind of holding his knee for a while, and I was like, oh, God, this is going to be just this season down the drain. But he stayed in, and he said he was fine afterwards. So, yeah, should be an interesting game at 1:30 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the best. I mean, you have to, as Fran Duffy says, you play the way the schedule falls. But with that being said, it's like this isn't a great draw for Temple, just in that they have to open up against a really good defensive team. Old Dominion was, I think, number 4 in the country last year in total defense and giving up about 60 points per game. So they were really good on that side of the ball. And I think it's just unfortunate that Temple didn't get, you know, maybe a game or two under their belt before they go down to Charleston, get some of the rust off. I know they had that exhibition last week, but I think they could have definitely used another game before it. Obviously, they tried, as Fran Duffy has said, they tried to schedule another game, didn't
they
work out.
They tried
for
to
them.
Make that game a real
game. Yeah, they would have liked to try and make that Philly or the Jefferson game a regular season game for Temple and an exhibition for Jefferson, but for whatever reason, they couldn't work that out. So I think just the timing of things. I think it's gonna be tough for Temple tomorrow, and it's not an easy matchup. And you know, I think with as far as Josh goes and just getting him going, he's gonna have to get his feet wet still. I was surprised to see him play 32 minutes in that exhibition, which was a good sign. He needed to get some time and some live action, but I don't know how I feel about tomorrow. I think they could have a little bit of a rough go at things down in Charleston. I think they're going to grow as the season goes on, and I wouldn't panic if they lose tomorrow. But you know, I think it's going to be it could be some tough sledding down in Charleston when they first start off.
I like the Stiff Runner story, because BJ originally went to UVA,
mm-hmm.
Brandon originally went to East Carolina, and they said, "Now we're getting the band back together. We're both going to transfer
with their
to
father."
Old Dominion.
Fathers of Brian Stith is on the staff. For any NBA listeners out there, I do. Brian Stith was in the league for 10 years in the NBA. He played with the Nuggets, so I think at least one of these guys was born in Denver. He was a pretty decent player in the NBA. So they're both good. I mean, so BJ's 6'5", 215, so he's one of those bigger guards. So BJ Stith and Ahmad Caver both can move the ball. In terms of passing,
Caver was an all-conference player last year for them.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, and so this is a very, very early sample size. In 2 games so far this season, they've beaten Towson and James Madison. They beat Towson 57-54, JMU 69-53. So that's through 2 games, they're allowing 53.5 points per game, 33% shooting from opponents, not great field three-point field goal percentage from opponents, 26.7%. So again, very early, 2 games, but so far they're still defending well. They can rebound it. They've got, you know, Stith and Caver are, you know, I think Caver's a little bit smaller, like 6'2", but against Stith is a bigger guard, so they can go bigger, go smaller in the backcourt, and a fairly decently well-rounded team. So if Temple does win this game, it's a nice window open the season. You know, again, if you're a surface level college basketball fan, you say, okay, big deal, they beat Old Dominion, but it's actually a nice win to start the season if they can beat them and then just move along with whoever's next. I think maybe Auburn in the next round, probably.
Yeah, probably. I mean, Indiana State beat IU, so it could be Indiana State.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I think
that'd be a really intriguing matchup. I mean, they didn't just beat IU;
they smacked
IU.
Yeah. I mean, IU's a little bit down, but. Temple did kind of, not to jump on the kid. Temple did get a little bit of a break. Greg McClinton, who's a transfer from Wake, towards ACL, so he's out for the year. He would have been a big man that maybe could have given Obi trouble. So, yeah, I would agree. If they win this game, I think this is a game that you look back at the end of the year and you go, that was a 20-win ODU team.
Mm-hmm. It's time for our sometimes serious and sometimes silly mailbag. We appreciate all the questions on Twitter and the message boards and email as well. First question comes from Carbo Commander on Twitter. If Temple beats UCF, is UCF still the front runner for the Group of Five New York Six Bowl invite?
You say New York Six? New Year's
no,
Six?
I said Group of Five.
Yeah, that's all right. It's the New York. It's the New York Six Bowl. Yeah. Played in Times Square.
And it's going to rain half an inch on Saturday.
Yes. Well, that could be true. We don't know.
Assuming they win the whoever wins the conference is going to get that bid. No other Group of Five conference right. has a team with less than two losses. Only one has a two-loss team. Most of them are three-loss teams. If UCF loses the Temple, writes its ship and smacks USF and beats Memphis in the conference championship game, then yep, they're playing the Fiesta Bowl or whatever it is this year, the Cotton Bowl, whatever it is. If USF wins, they're going to do it. If Memphis does it, they'll do it. I think this is the year. They've always been saying Power Six and that the difference between the American and the Mountain West is significantly larger than the difference between the American and the ACC. This is a year where I think they actually get to prove it.
You just hear Mike Resco's heart beating proudly.
It's a good year for the American.
Oh, yeah.
It's a shame Temple's not really that much of a part of it, but it's a good year for the American. Mm-hmm. Memphis, USF, UCF. All in the mix.
Well, yeah, and the way Temple's playing right now, maybe they're a bowl team too. So it's definitely a good year for the conference.
Daiquiris and Boca. Daiquiris. Anyway, sorry.
Next question comes from Temple to the ACC. Mailbag question for AlScoop.com and friends, basically the media group at the Temple football games, is a college football coaching staff. Who is the head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, swag coordinator, recruiting coordinator, and ball boy?
I don't have the question in front of me. I have no idea what's going on.
Okay.
No, I thought, never mind.
Hand that over to Kyle.
I thought you were just going to print out multiple.
I'm trying to save the trees here.
Yeah, I'm trying to save trees.
Basically, it's all the media members at Temple that cover the games, and who would you assign to head coach, defensive coordinator?
I mean, can we just get this out of the way right now and make Bud the ball boy?
Ball boy Bud.
Head coach, OCDC, swag coordinator.
Okay, all right. Gotcha.
Kyle's letting this marinate a little bit. So Bud's the ball boy.
Air Bud.
Air Bud is ball boy.
Ball boy Bud.
Who's the head coach?
Head coach. I can kind of just see Narducci being the head coach, but as like a game manager. Like he's just has strong coordinators. He's just kind of the CEO. Well, you guys, I really appreciate everyone coming. Thanks for coming out Sunday. Nobody's gonna outwork him. He's gonna be everywhere. He'll be at every high school in the 40-mile radius.
Yes, he will.
Games.
Recruit heavily.
Have a lot
Mark,
of
our
South
entire
Jersey.
Yeah, Mark, our entire recruiting class comes from South Jersey. Not even North Jersey or Central Jersey. You signed 7 kids from Gateway. What's up? I don't know. I just like those kids.
You want to know my head coach?
Yeah.
Donald Hunt. I control the Philadelphia Public League.
I like it. I like it.
Strong Pub League. South Jersey. Bring Temple back.
Offensive coordinator, Kyle Gauss. I can see you wearing a visor. I can see you going for it on fourth down.
Getting moved up to the press
every
box
single,
after yelling at somebody.
It's like Kyle's 4th and 28 from your own 7. You went for it. Why? Did I stutter?
I told you I played my nephew in Madden about 2 weeks ago. I didn't play Madden years, just no mercy. It was like 87-6.
You're that
just
guy.
Mercy. He's got to learn. A lot of play action, they'll go. Play action rolling out to the tight end just over and over.
What
again.
Did Ryder say about that?
Ryder just kidding. Can you stop? No. No, kid.
Maybe, this is a lesson, kid.
Maybe, kid, you should actually know when to pass the ball and don't do play action on 3rd and 17
How
when I know that it's going to be a
How old is he?
He's turned 6 in February. Jeez. I turned 7 in February. 7 in February, I'm sorry.
Think you're being a little hard on him?
No. Defensive coordinator? Anybody got a
Tom Hanselman. I see Tom Hanselman.
I see Tom just like...
Pride of WHIP radio.
Tom Hanselman just like really distraught after they give up 70 points to UCF.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Resigns after 3 games.
Kyle's doing his hair, which
he'll do the
Tom
Ron,
does not have.
He'll do the Ron Dickerson thing where he'll try to resign, but then Narducci won't let him.
It's
like,
a truly bizarre moment in Temple football
Ron history. Dickerson tried resigning as
after
Temple's
pit,
coach
after
he lost
the
pit. And the athletic director was like, well, why don't you take a step back? We're not going to accept your resignation.
Yeah. Swag coordinator.
We need somebody young with the finger on the pulse of the recruits.
Matt.
Who's got the energy?
Yeah, Matt Vendor.
I like it.
And recruiting coordinator.
I need, for the Mark Narducci, Kyle Gauss, Donald Hunt, whatever, trifecta team, we need a dirty recruiting coordinator. I'm paying left and right. I'm giving out fringe benefits. I'm giving a nice 3 to 5 year run before the NCAA comes barking.
And somebody, the FBI is going to come barking.
I'm changing it. Bud's along with the ball boy. Bud's my recruiting coordinator. He's going out there and he's just throwing flip around. He's just paying.
What about Dalton and I? Where are we? Are we on the staff?
I'm sorry if not everybody gets to be involved in this.
That stinks.
You're going to be the
staff. I just show up so I don't get fined.
You're a graduate assistant. Don's my wide receivers coach.
A graduate assistant?
You're like that...
Can I at least be a position coach? Like linebackers coach?
You're one
coach
of the juice boys. Like every week.
Oh, the money down guys?
Money down.
And like, get your t-shirt.
And
if you're not
jumping enough, and you just see me and Bud just staring at you. Like, God, you're not going to play in. Like, play. I'm like, not until next
time. It's like those guys in the street that flip the signs.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can be one of the Quiznos spinners.
I think Kyle would actually have a lot of success at being the Pat Boyle of
just wearing a really bright shirt and wave.
Like, you just equated me to
the those numbers.
Yeah, the end.
You just equated me to like the Liberty Tax guy.
Yeah,
he's like spinning in the sandwich board.
And you're not wearing the Statue of Liberty costume. Maybe you are. Maybe you're wearing the Statue of Liberty costume. You're spinning at Quizno. Have us come do your taxes. It's seasonal work at best for you.
Next question comes from your boy Mike from the Great Northeast through email. Hey Al Scoopers, who'd have thunk that we'd be this close to making a bowl game? But here we are, one win away. I think we've reached the point where if we don't have a bowl game, it is a bad season. Not just this year, but any year, right? Do you guys agree that if basically now the expectation every year is that Temple should be in a bowl game?
Quick question, not to digress too much. When people say the Great Northeast, what does that mean? The great, like the outskirts of it, or is that...
It means still within the city limits, just in the Northeast, like Longcrest, Fox Chase, Pine Valley.
Mayfair?
Mayfair is like real Northeast. Like there's parts near like Southampton-ish where like they're right outside the city, but you go across the street and like, okay, that's technically Philly, that's technically Northeast, and those aren't like really Northeast.
Right.
Like my wife's from the Great Northeast, she's not really from the Northeast.
Right.
She kind of is.
There we go. There we go.
So I'll rephrase the question. So basically, the question from Mike here is that, do you think it's an expectation each year that the Temple should be in a bowl game, and if they don't, it's a bad year?
I mean, it depends on the circumstances. I think people have bowl expectations heading into this year, not a New Year's Six bowl, but and look, it's within reach again. I think we can agree that they should have beaten UConn, should have beaten Army, so they in some ways they should be bowl eligible already. But I think that's a reasonable expectation. But if you have a whole spate of injuries or a completely new coaching staff, you know, I do think that. The days of somebody coming in and saying, okay, they only won two games, so they're completely rebuilding. I don't know if that's going to fly here anymore. So I do think the bowl eligibility should be an expectation every year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's not some...
We're not, like, comparing this to, like, USC or Penn State or...
No, and it's not like it's even as hard as, like, making the tournament in basketball. Like, it's pretty easy to get to a bowl. You carve out six wins, you go to a bowl, you're not in the MAC anymore, you're not in the first year of the American where you get to six wins and you're going to have trouble getting a bowl. You're going to get to a bowl if you get six wins. I mean, Virginia Tech's made 24 straight. Florida State, up until this year, has made 35 straight. They're not going to go anywhere this year. That streak's going to snap. But, like, I'm not saying, like you said, you're not comparing yourself to the Penn States and the Alabamas and that, but, like... I think it's reasonable to compare yourself to the Boston Colleges and the Maryland's and stuff like that, where in Pittsburgh's gone 9 straight until maybe this year.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, I would agree with that. If it's a year that you don't go to a bowl, it's a bad year. It's not like – I don't think there should ever be an expectation again where, it's a rebuilding year, it's a two-win year.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to carve out some easy wins.
Yeah, especially considering the circumstances and the talent that Jeff Collins inherited, I don't think there's any reason. There was no reason to think that they couldn't get to six wins. I think that was a reasonable expectation, and certainly going to have a decent shot to do so.
Next question comes from Sean Cottrell on Twitter. This football season feels similar to 2013 and 2014 to an extent, with the team struggling, then finding its way towards the end of the year. Do you think they can carry this through enough to be relevant again in the AAC in 2018?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you would hope so, because I think next year, well, not even next year, I think even before, once you get to the spring, you'll see how many of these redshirt freshmen are ready to compete. You know, you hear, it could be one glimmer of something. Kyle and I were talking about this a couple of days ago. You know, the fact that Jeff even mentioned Darian Bryant as a scout team player of the week on offense. So there's a guy, if you really need to start building up depth, not just elite depth, but just depth on your offensive line, if someone like him starts coming around, if Jeremy Jennings starts coming around, a lot of these, you know, LJ Holder, I mean, LJ is what, 6'3", 215 or something like that. You know, got, yeah, they're basically redshirting
everybody, they're redshirting the entire class. The only true freshman to play is Todd Senteo, and he's going to end up.
Yeah, redshirting. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you lose people, but, I mean, you have... again, you're redshirting everybody. You're bringing people in. You'd like to think that you'll have a healthy Rockwell Armstead next year. You know, again, the coaches are just more acclimated. Well, you probably lose a couple position coaches, maybe. But everybody's a year better, and I would think you'd have to carry momentum into next year.
Yeah, the only thing I would disagree with that with the question is, you said, okay, it's 2013 to 2014 years where you got kind of hit the stride again. 2014 was the opposite of that. They were 4-1 at one point. They were 5-3 after they beat ECU, and they stumbled to the end and needed to claw out the worst game of all time, a 10-3 win over Tulane in front of bad cameras and fog and steamed up cameras.
Joe Montana's kid was playing quarterback.
Yeah, Joe Montana's, Nick Montana.
Yeah, probably wearing LA Gear sneakers.
Yeah, so like they were 5-3, and then the final four games of the year, they put up a combined 42 points. Mm-hmm. They stumbled towards the end of 2014.
Yeah.
Next question from Philly Bully on Twitter. We got a couple here. First one is, any targets at running back for the 2018 class?
Kyle Wright.
Yeah.
I think
I'm sure there'll be others. You know, they're still, they've been out recruiting. There's probably just a name that we don't know about yet. And again, I think I said this before. I literally base this upon nothing other than a gut feeling or intuition. I really don't feel like they're out of it. Like, Kyle Wright just strikes me as a kid who seems genuine in terms of how he writes and positions himself on Twitter. I think he legitimately feels bad entertaining interest from other programs while he's committed to Temple. He said they're still one of my favorites. You do have his you know, Trav Betty says he's shutting down his recruitment. He's enrolling early. He has that working for him. You know, Matt, you do or do not see Kyle Dobbins as a running back at this level?
Well, I mean, I've gotten a chance to see him live in two games this year, and I think he's shown some flashes. You know, he's kind of splitting carries with two other guys at Timber Creek, and I think he transferred to Timber Creek kind of to win a state championship potentially, and not, you know, maybe not go for 1,000 yards like he did the last 2 years at St. Augustine. I think he proved what he can do at running back. Now at Timber Creek, he's kind of been proven what he can do at safety or what he could do at outside linebacker. I asked Rob Henson, is he a linebacker or is he a safety? And Rob told me he's a running back. So I still think he projects as a running back. But with that being said, I think you definitely, considering the fact that they have two healthy scholarship running backs right now, and both of those guys are set to be seniors, and David Hood and Raquel Armstead, I think you have to at least try to take two running backs. You have to either get Kyle Wright back on board or add another guy. I think you look at it like Matt Rule's recruiting class with TJ Simmons, Raquel, and Jagger Gardner. I think you kind of have to do one of those and restock at running back.
Yeah, I mean, Kyle Dobbins did have a good game last week against Seneca in the playoffs. 18 carries, 116 yards, 2 touchdowns. So, I mean, he's definitely still, when he's gotten the ball, he's been relatively productive at all.
Right.
But everybody's productive as a running back in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Next question from Philly Bully as well. Do the Owls win the Charleston Classic?
No.
No, absolutely not.
I don't think so. I just think is it so far out of the question? No, it's just an interesting field. I just think that you have a lot of new pieces coming together. They are returning some players, obviously. Just my gut feeling tells me that they're not going to win this. You'll see some signs of things that they need to improve, and then I think you'll see some stretches of encouraging play. I do not think they win it.
Yeah, people aren't going to want to hear it, but I think they're going to struggle a little bit early in the season. I think the fact that they start late, they have some new pieces that Josh Brown and Shiz Awesome will have to gel. I just think it's going to take a little bit of time for them to get going.
No, I don't think they win either. I mean, I don't think it's out of the question. I think I'd say Dayton or Clemson.
And then following that is, what percent chance does Temple have to get over 20 wins this season?
80?
70, 75. I think it's a good possibility. If everything goes right, this is a tournament team. If 90% of things go right, this is a tournament team. Mm-hmm. But you're putting a lot of faith in freshmen. You're putting a lot of faith on the health of Josh Brown. I'll be curious. One thing I did like, and this is blatantly stealing from Mike Jensen. Mike Jensen tweeted, I like teams that have multiple point guards, and Temple has one in every class. He thinks they have 4 point guards on this team, and Josh Brown, Shiz Alston, Alani Moore, and Nate Pierre-Louis. So, like, they do. The word of the day is depth. If everything clicks right and make the tournament, which would
the word of the day is depth.
But you have to figure, I still think they start the first like 10 games or so around 500.
Sure.
I still think it'll be tough to get things going early in the season, mm-hmm. but I think they'll hit their stride. Wait once they get into, you know, game 10, game 11, and I think they'll start to click a little bit.
Yeah, if they're 8-4, 9-3 or something going into conference play, then yeah, all the horses are off. Like, I get it. Like, it's just a straight stretch. But I agree with Matt. They might be 5-5, 6-4 after 10. They could stumble.
One more here from Philly Bully. Why is the new library being constantly delayed?
Well, they changed the construction to now it's going to be a concrete base.
Yeah.
No, it's going to be steel base now.
Yeah.
Steel-based library.
Yes.
And, yeah.
And it's construction.
I've gone to the library twice in 4 years, so.
I was in the old library just the other night. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's old.
That's why we
PO's library. That's where you're getting a new one.
Yeah.
The old one's going to be my new office. It's the entire floor. But they won't give me the furniture. It'll just be one desk in the middle.
Hello? Well, you're going to get some revenue from all those photo ops that you partook in.
Exactly. Temple has been using my likeness in two different ways in two different programs for 7 years now, and I haven't seen a dime. Oh. And I'm sure I signed a waiver, but I don't remember signing a waiver.
Yeah, talk to him about it.
Come see me.
Next question comes from James Ruffield on Twitter. Over the last few weeks, Temple has fallen in love with the nickname Frankie Juice. What is the best sports nickname of all time? Also, is Thanksgiving an overrated holiday? The sports nickname, the one that I always think about is the Fridge.
Fridge is a great name.
I think the Fridge is fantastic.
I do think we're lazy with nicknames now. Like Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod.
Right, yeah.
Like, things are just like, you just go off their name now and that's boring.
Yeah.
Currently, I like the process for Joel Embiid. Okay. That's great. But I think it's just a classic. I'd do Sultan Swat, something like that.
Mm.
I was a big fan of like some of those Phillies nicknames on like the 08 team, like the Big Piece for Ryan Howard and the Man for Chase Utley. Those are two good ones.
I mean, like there's a few that float through my head, like the Round Mound Rebound for Charles Barkley.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I mean, this is going way back before I was born. There was a pitcher in baseball, Sal the Barber Magley, and I believe his nickname came from the fact that like he used to like to brush people off the plate like and throw up and in, and that was his way of saying like he'll buzz you, he'll give you a buzz cut or something like that. Pete Rose, Charlie Hustle.
About Black Mamba.
Black Mamba.
Yeah.
Bubba Chuck.
Megatron. Bubba Chuck.
Yeah.
Run DMC from when McFadden was good.
I'm trying to think. Well, I mean, you had Rocket Man for Randall. Ron Jaworski was the Polish Rifle.
Ooh.
Which
then they named, was it McCown or Fitzpatrick? So they called somebody the Amish Rifle.
Yeah, the Amish Rifle. That was Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
of the beard at the time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And is Thanksgiving an overrated holiday?
No.
No, I don't think overrated.
No.
I don't think it's anything compared to, like, Christmas, but Thanksgiving's more relaxed. Christmas, I'm driving everywhere. I'm going to, like, all these families doing this. Thanksgiving, people just come over, watching football, and eating turkey, having a couple adult beverages.
Oh, yeah, next week will be a little bit more Thanksgiving centric.
Yeah. It's our Thanksgiving special. We'll have pilgrims come in just to reenact.
Matt's here dressed as a pilgrim.
I'll wear a top hat.
We had a Thanksgiving play in like second grade, and like there were pilgrims and Native Americans, and I was a pilgrim. I remember it was in second grade, so they didn't expect you to remember lines. So I had this little like cardboard construction like pilgrim face, and my lines were written on the back, but like it was so close that you couldn't read them. Like, what the hell is this? So like in the play, you just see me be like almost like an old man trying to like adjust my glasses to get lighting on my like chicken scratch lines. And it must have just been like, God bless us, everyone.
Yeah. A Christmas Carol.
You weren't there, you don't know.
Speaking of Christmas carols, that's the next question.
Next
question comes from Arun Kumar. Since this is probably the last one before Thanksgiving,
which it is not. We still love Arun, though.
Probably going to be an altered schedule next week.
Yeah.
Could you please power rank your favorite Christmas tunes, and he's directing it to you, Joe.
Number one, The Christmas Song, Nat King Cole. Number two, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas for Frank Sinatra. Number three, Silver Bells from Percy Faith. I've actually talked about this before. I think like my wild card is Wonderful Christmas Time from Paul McCartney. That's somewhere in there. Kyle's ticked off. and White Christmas from Bing Crosby.
Number one, do they know it's Christmas time at all?
Yeah, great song. Can you, maybe closer to Christmas, we will play that, and we will, you can go through and guess like who's singing where.
I Bob Dylan, and that's just like, why am I even here?
He doesn't have any vocal parts.
No, but he's in the video. He's just
he's
like,
in the, he's, that's every, like, he has more of a vocal part than We Are the World.
We are the world.
There's a choice we're making. That's my Dylan. That wasn't bad.
That was okay. Different. Yeah. Mine was more of a spicy. It's okay.
So one last question here from Getsky. Ham on Thanksgiving, question mark.
Nah.
No. No, no,
no. No,
no.
No. What did you say, Kyle? Speak up.
I'm upset by that question. No. Yeah. Turkey, you're a dark meat or light meat guy?
I like both, but I like dark meat better.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I'm a light meat guy.
I'm a light meat guy.
Yeah.
One year, this is not to go too far into Gauss lore. One time we, my mom like butchered the turkey and it was very dry. And by happenstance, my brother, who was a very clumsy, like, 10-year-old, spilled a thing of Hawaiian punch on it, and the entire turkey was coated in Hawaiian punch. Best turkey I've ever had in my life.
Are you serious?
It added moisture to it. Story. It was like, really dry. It was just, like, oh, this is really
that's
good.
That's, like, half Christmas vacation. Like, there's
my
the heart.
My brother's, like, crying. And I'm like, no, that's actually really good.
Chris, just distraught. It's like a Hawaiian Thanksgiving.
So now every year, it's, oh, don't spill the Hawaiian punch on it. Because we still do it. We do, like, the Hawaiian punch mixed with, like, the 7-Up, make a little, like, a...
Maybe I'm just naive. I've never really heard the ham on Thanksgiving thing. You get more of like the people will come to me like, oh, you're Italian. Do you do? There's this belief that you have to have turkey on Christmas, but we've had like all sorts of stuff on Christmas. Christmas is more of a wild card dinner. It's like lasagna. It's ham. It's all
it's
sorts
entire
of stuff.
Stereotypes entirely inspired by Zach Gelb's tweets.
Yeah.
Zach just goes out of his way to be like, look at us, we're Italian, we're eating this on this holiday.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving, though.
Yeah.
Hosting again this year.
Did you host last year?
No, we were in an apartment in Wynwood last year, so we did not host. Hosted the year before. Chelsea's a great cook, her mom's a great cook, my mom's a good cook, so it'll be fun. I think I'm going to try my hand at like trying to make a pie this year. It's probably not going to go well. I'm a good cook, otherwise I'd never make a pie. What's that?
What type of pie are you going to make?
Either pumpkin,
you
can't apple, screw
a pumpkin. You just like put the filling in a pie.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and make my own crust. That's where I'm gonna go wrong. Matt's just shaking his head.
Just buy a graham cracker crust, and if you're
part of me agrees with that in the sense that if you're being tasked with you are providing the pie, you can't f it up. You can't be like, hey guys, I got experimental. Now we ended up going with this. It's a lighter crust than usual. Let's see how it goes. No, I'm expecting a certain thing with the apple pie. I'm expecting a certain thing with the pumpkin pie.
I would like to try to make a sweet potato pie.
So that's going to do it for us this week. We appreciate the questions on the mailbag, and we will talk to you early next week before the holiday.